Right, let's get going. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us. I'm
Morning.
delighted to be restarting our 101 employment law webinar series and being back in the hot seat. It feels like quite a while since we've been doing them. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Peter. I'm a partner with NPM Legal. We're a specialist employment and business immigration practice. We're based in the south of England, but we have employers that we work with who are all over the world. They just have a common interest, which is employing people here in the UK, and that's obviously where we help them. I'm absolutely delighted to be joined today by my colleague, fellow partner, Michael Farrier. Morning, Michael.
Morning, everyone. Morning, Peter.
You're in the hot seat for your Employment Law 101 webinar debut today.
Indeed, yes, looking forward to it.
Yeah, exciting. The theme of this small series that we're running is all about dispute resolution, alternative means of resolving disputes, and in particular, workplace dispute resolution as well. We're certainly seeing a spike in claims and incidents, I think, really as a result of all those things that went away during the pandemic and during COVID. Now people are working back in a more normalized environment, and certainly a lot of people coming back more together more frequently. We're seeing those workplace disputes come back. Legal fees are expensive. Dealing with proceedings is time consuming. It's a bit of a grind going through the tribunal system. We wanted to talk to you about mediation. So I think let's get into it. Just a reminder for those of you that have joined us before, you'll know we absolutely welcome questions. There's a Q&A function down at the bottom of your screen. So please ask any questions in the Q&A function. We're not going to open up anybody's microphones or cameras or put you on the spot, anything like that. But we will address the questions either as we go or at the end. So feel free to ask away as we get rolling. But otherwise, Michael, talk to us about mediation. What is mediation?
Okay, this is really an introductory session for those who know a little or not very much about it. But essentially, mediation is one of the oldest conflict resolution processes used by tribal elders when there were members in conflict with each other. And essentially, it's a facilitated conversation between the parties in contact, in conflict rather, by an independent person, the mediator, who's impartial, completely independent of the conflict or its circumstances, who acts as a neutral. And the role of the mediator is to facilitate the conversation, to try and help the parties find their own solution to their conflict. So it's a very powerful mechanism, very flexible. It's voluntary. It's also confidential, which we can talk about a bit in a few minutes. But it can be used at most stages of conflict in the workplace. And I think after 30 years of mediating, I think if the mind is open to consider mediation as a way of starting a conversation between parties where it's stalled, then whether it be in legal action or legal proceedings before legal actions commence, where you're looking to restore the relationship between the parties, then think about mediation and whether it could assist you in your policies.
So where, I mean, speaking obviously as a lawyer, my kind of understanding historically of mediation has been around it being used in a commercial context, so civil or commercial mediation, and I'm kind of broadly familiar with those concepts. What's the difference between that then and where we're talking about mediation in a workplace setting?
Essentially, it's this. Workplace mediation, as the name suggests, is in relation to conflicts within the workplace. They can include legal conflicts that are ongoing whilst the relationship is ongoing. Often you see that happening. But essentially, they involved relationship breakdowns between parties, between teams, between departments, between businesses, for example, too. But essentially, you're looking to find out if mediation can help restore working relationships between colleagues, boardroom members, even partners in a law firm, et cetera, to get past the problem they've encountered. Often I see relationships that have been working very well for years suddenly hit a roadblock, if you like, and there's entrenchment of parties' positions. Well, used in the right formula, in the right setting, mediation can help parties talk out their issues and find their own way forward and a roadmap for the future. The essential difference with workplace mediation is that any outcome that's achieved is a morally binding outcome. It's not a legally enforceable outcome. When compared to legal mediation, civil and commercial mediation, as you call it, often the outcome will be a binding agreement to settle claims legally or to settle legal proceedings. And that agreement will be enforceable as a contract if it's breached.
Yeah. So is it kind of like almost like a psychological contract between the parties? They sort of become invested in this process, and although there's not a legal claim as such that arises from not doing it, they're bound by being invested in the process and agreeing to it.
Yes, I think the importance of using mediation is to ensure all the stakeholders and the employee population understand what's involved and the value of it. And that will require effective communication and training on the processes. But I look upon this after many years of mediating, but also helping others to mediate and train on mediation. I look upon it as something additional to the toolkit HR and businesses have for dealing with employee relations and breakdowns, something that you can use supplementally. And if you look upon it as that, as opposed to trying to fit it into a certain place in the conflict zone, then you can understand its power.
So could I say it's like another tool in the toolbox?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So bringing this into a practical realm then, what does the process typically look like from the start? Okay.
The business would, any business that has an issue that wants to try mediation, they don't need to have a policy on it. They can talk to me or others like me to find out whether the case in question is a suitable case for mediation, and I'll deal with cases that maybe won't be considered appropriate in due course. But essentially, I typically expect a referral from HR. They ring me up and say, Michael, look, we've got this situation. It's a budding grievance situation. Would you mind having a conversation with the two parties involved, the two individuals? They've worked together in a team, typically. They've lost their way together, and we want to try and fix it before it overflows into the team more widely. And at that point, I will say, well, thanks very much for the referral. Here's my engagement terms. And if we come to a point where I am appointed by the business and the parties agree to go forward and try mediation, then you, the business, will be the instructing client, if you like, only for the purpose of paying my fee. The actual clients, professionally, to whom I own a confidential duty, will be the parties themselves. And that is quite a different scenario to get your head around initially, especially, well, clients of ours would come to me for an idea of mediation and whether it would be appropriate. But essentially speaking, if the parties who have the problem are happy for me to get involved, recognizing it's all wrapped up in a confidential bubble, which can't be broken by HR insisting on knowing what went on, for example, or the business wanting to know. Normally I say everything stays in mediation unless the parties jointly agree to it being shared and how it's going to be shared and how widely it's going to be shared. So once I've had that referral, I'll then make contact, normally by email, introducing myself, telling the parties what mediation is and what it can look like, and inviting them to respond and have a conversation with me. And that first part of the journey, I'm trying to find out if they understand enough about mediation to want to try it and they feel comfortable with the idea. So my job initially is to encourage the parties to look at mediation as a potential means for solving their issues, and then go with them, answering their concerns, their questions, and reassuring them about the integrity of the process, the confidentiality of the process. But that's often a challenge for the parties. Well, how do I know you won't tell HR what's going on? Well, the beauty of instructing me as a solicitor mediator is that I'm bound professionally by a duty of confidentiality to all my clients. And if I get that wrong, I can be struck off. So you can be assured that I will not be taking any shortcut in the interest of trying to satisfy HR's demands. But once the parties have pretty much satisfied me that they're ready to talk about the issue together, I'll then have a couple of fact-finding conversations typically, or meetings online or in person, whereby I try and understand what their view of the world is and their issues together, and how the other party might be starting to think about their side of the coin, if you like. And I think once I've got enough information, I will then suggest that we think about a joint meeting together, whereby both parties come normally together in person, but it can be on Teams or remotely these days, don't mind. I prefer in-person mediation because I think you actually achieve a lot more engagement and empathy together by being in the same room. Yeah. Once we've got to that point, I'll arrange with HR to say, okay, we're going forward to a joint meeting now. Can you arrange the facilities? Or if they want me to do it, then we can do that as well. And then I prepare the parties for the joint sessions, it's called. And that typically involves them joining. If it's online, it'll be me having conversations in different rooms with them individually as the day starts. And then I'll bring them into a joint meeting room together. And I'll set out the ground rules for the day, and there'll be introductions. The ground rules that I set are designed to allow the parties to hear each other as to what's being said and to really understand what the other person is saying. So one of the ground rules is, please don't interrupt the other party when they're speaking. Try to listen to understand and not just to reply, because it's important for you to hear how the other party is seeing the circumstances, which may be very different to how you're seeing them. And then the other typical ground rule is to say, right, well, I've allowed each of you 10 minutes of uninterrupted speaking time to make an opening statement, if you like, about what's important, what's brought you to mediation, what you want out of it, that you're committed to finding a solution together, and to listening to understand how the other party sees the issues. And after those uninterrupted speaking sessions, I'll then summarize what each party has said, and I might use different language to improve the chances of it being understood by the room, and points of emphasis. So I'll emphasize apologies that may be offered in the opening sessions, or I might use very different and more neutral language to try and calm down emotional communications or language that's being used. Again, just to improve the chance of the parties understanding what's being said and how deeply a point is being felt by someone. And then the conversation moves forward with me encouraging them to repeat a point, or to reflect, or to ask open questions, looking to sort of negotiate them forward as the battle lines have been drawn, if you like, from the opening statements. And my job is to try and find areas of common ground as the conversation moves forward. And often that is with relationship breakdowns, looking for times for the parties to reimagine when they did work well together and what it would take to get back to those times. So it sounds a bit soft and a bit sensitive as a process, but actually it's very powerful, because the parties who have the conflict are confronting each other. And if you compare typically the grievance process, the person who has the grievance will talk to the business will go away and investigate the grievance. They may talk to the other party, the accused, if I can call them that, but never in a grievance does the aggrieved and the accused come together to really talk through what's important to them and how they could sort out their issue. Mediation gives you that flexibility that formal processes don't. So it's very powerful. Depending on the issues, I normally find if it's a day mediation, starting at 10 by about 2 or 3 o'clock after a lunchtime break and a few other comfort breaks, the parties are getting weary. And if they're not getting towards a solution, I'll suggest another session a couple of days later. But if things are going well, and it's normally for some reason around 3 or 4 o'clock, you see breakthroughs happening, you then keep talking and you're encouraging the parties to funnel down and push away their issues. And then if they've got a set of points they want to capture as an outcome, I'll then be the scribe and suggest ways of capturing a point. So one might typically be, we agree together that every morning when we come into the office, we'll make a point of saying hello. It's a simple thing like that, which may sound very, if I can put it this way, soft, but they can often actually be great ways of repairing the damage that's being done if someone is feeling isolated or that their other colleague never talks to them. I'll end up with a written agreement that will be without prejudice and confidential. And that's their roadmap for avoiding the same problems in the future. And at that point, I'll then discuss with them if they want to share it with anyone, with their line managers, for example, with HR, with any stakeholders otherwise. And they decide and agree, and it's put in the agreement, captured, memorialized, if you like, as to what they want to do with it. And my personal follow-up is to give them a call a month later, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and then a 12 months, just to check in with them to see how things are going. And if they've lost their way again, we can pick up the mediation discussion, maybe for half a day, get it back on track. But mostly these situations work well because once they get over that tipping point of the conflict, they can just pick up and discuss matters and move ahead if there are future issues themselves without the need for me to get involved again. In a nutshell, there isn't, in HR and legal, we're always looking for a process, aren't we? We're used to the ACAS code having a formal process of investigation, first warning, second warning, dismissal, etc. But mediation is very different. It's free flowing. And for that reason, it has enormous benefits for business and can really, I think, support the business culture to empower our people to sort out their own problems and not just use these archaic tools of grievance and disciplinary processes for the business to try and do so, when in fact, the best solution is to get the people sorting out themselves.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, I mean, obviously, your role is one of independence and neutrality. But what about kind of advice and judgments, if you like, you know, if I can put it that way?
Good question. Well, when I started my first course mediating, I was dreadful because as lawyers, you often, certainly after years in practice, you get an idea very quickly as to what the possible solution would be. And you're very encouraged to share with your clients that solution and recommend it. But the mediators are all very different. You're not an advisor. You're an impartial, you're a neutral. You don't get into the arena itself. Your job is to stay out of it. So therefore, a mediator won't make a finding of fact. The mediator won't make any ruling. It won't adjudicate, won't sit in judgment. It's something of an authority figure, maybe, through independence. Certainly in legal mediations and judicial mediations in particular, where a judge sits as a mediator, it's often helpful for the parties to have that authority figure to really respect what's being said. But in workplace mediation, you're looking really to have someone who is a trusted neutral. It could be someone in the organization who is respected by many as being wise, if you like, and good at people skills and conflict management and coaching. They don't need to be external. But the role of the mediator is to just facilitate the discussion between the parties. And if you like, help the parties to reflect by holding up the mirrors as to what the issues are and how it may be being seen by the other party, to find solutions for the parties' obstructions, if you like, in their relations together. So in that sense, when acting as a mediator, I have no vested interest in the outcome. My job is just to encourage the parties to reach one and keep them talking until they do. But I don't have any follow-up advice that typically as a lawyer I would give or be concerned about. So it's quite refreshing, a role change, but it's helped me enormously in practice with the advice I give and with the cases I've advocated down the years, etc., all the litigations I get involved with still.
Yeah, okay.
It's a very important role that it has to be seen as impartial. And if you like, the mediator is in control of the day, but the parties determine what they want to cover and when they want to cover it. Hopefully that explains the role.
Yeah, it does. Just a reminder to everyone that's joining us live today, please do ask any questions. If you've got any burning questions coming out of what Michael's talking about, then do use the Q&A function down at the bottom and we'll do our best to address those. I think what people will be really interested in hearing about, Michael, next is when you can use mediation. So what sort of situations are we talking about here? Disciplinaries, grievances, the like. What have you seen? When would you say it can be utilised as a tool?
I think certainly my approach is not, this is how I do it and how I would recommend mediation is looked at. Not every mediator will have the same view, but as an employment practitioner, I'm focusing mostly in my practice area on employee relations. So people being always a source of passion and interest to me, I have an approach that says, well, there's no hard and fast rule that says you can't consider mediation in this scenario or you can't consider mediation until. So you can use it successfully ahead of any grievance formally being raised. But to illustrate the point I've made, even if a grievance has started with the party's agreement, you can say, look, let's just pause this process. What about mediation? Would that be an idea of bringing you together with a neutral so you can really hammer out the issues with the other party and see if you can find your own solution? If that doesn't work, you can always come back to the grievance process. Even after a grievance process has been concluded and any appeal has been lodged and concluded, you might think about mediation to restore the relationships and the damage done by the formality of the process, where the individual has, if you like, stood up against the business and maybe a line manager in the process. Often you see a line report being the aggrieved individual, don't you, against a more senior manager.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And regardless of the outcome of the grievance and the formality, they need to think about working together again. And mediation is often a restorative process that can really help them work through those issues.
I think that's a really, just to jump in there, I think that's a really key point. And I know you and I had a brief discussion about it yesterday. But I mean, when you step back and look at how the grievance process works, like you said before, we're all used to working within the ACAS code. We're all used to having that rigidity. And I think certainly as employment lawyers, we're probably, we're guilty of, but we're trained to look at the legal risk. So we're looking at head down process. How do we cap off the legal risk and just protect the organization, but make sure that things are dealt with in a fair way? And like you said before, the big kind of gaping hole in terms of grievances is it's very rare for the parties to actually confront each other. And how many times do we see those grievances where legitimately the employer says, look, there's nothing to see here. Like, we don't think that there's been wrongdoing in the sense that it's been described in your grievance. But what's the next piece? Like, these people still need to work together. Like, how do you repair that ongoing relationship? You've still got somebody who's raised a grievance. So yes, it might not have been bracketed in terms of legal liability and there's no legal issue there, but they're still feeling like they haven't got a resolution. You know, it might be cathartic for them to have got something off their chest and raised it. But if the grievance isn't being upheld, you know, rightly or wrongly, they're not going to feel like they've got a resolution to that problem. And I wonder whether mediation is a means. It's the missing thing. It's the thing that can actually give them some agency in it all.
Well, that's a good way of putting it. I agree with you. I think that view is very true. I've worked with these tools in practice now for 40 years, and I think they're broken tools. They need to be thrown aside, particularly the formality of disciplinaries and capability procedures. If someone can explain to me how you can expect as an employer someone to improve their performance by threatening their job if they don't and being surprised that they haven't pulled their socks up, then please do, because I've never seen that tool, for example, as a useful tool. But an example of where I've mediated many cases for a very large automotive business in the UK, they had a very formal capability process and appraisal process involving many layers of appeal, which had been negotiated collectively with the unions over the years. And they were just suffocating over and under the weight of the appeal levels. And so they turned to me for a pilot scheme to see whether mediation could actually solve the issue between manager and employee around performance issues that have been raised and which have been threatened formally or which have been brought into a formal PIP process. In every one of those 10 or so cases we did that were performance related, they solved their issues. They agreed as an outcome, we'll tear up the formal process. We don't need that anymore. The manager and the line employee were in a room together, often over a couple of sessions, where I would ask questions of the manager, okay, now tell your colleague here exactly what you expect in terms of job standards. When will your colleague know they're doing the job in the way you want him to or she want them to? That often challenged the manager because they hadn't really thought about this. The process, the formal PIP, had got them so locked in a battle, I must win this, I must prove the employee is underperforming. And the employee then is closing ranks and saying, I must prove I'm performing, without the conversation ever really identifying, well, what would be the benchmarks so that you both know everything's working well as you intend.
Yeah.
But that conversation over a couple of days cleared the air, set objectives, agreed different ways of communicating or emphasizing points of communication, and ripped up all the need for the formality of processes and warning. And was found by the organization to be a really empowering way of managing managers to manage. So the first follow-up was, right, we're going to train all our managers on how to hold difficult conversations, on how to communicate effectively with the skills and the qualities of mediation in that process, to try and avoid the need for a formal PIP. And so that when you come around to appraisal time, there's no surprise. The line employee and the line manager already know how far on the track they both are and how off the track the employee might be, how far behind the line, if you like. And it worked very successfully. Where it might not work, and there are areas where you can't substitute or supplement mediation, is where there are scenarios where the business needs to intervene formally because there's been a gross misconduct action suspected, which needs investigating and formal action taken, or where there's discriminatory, harassing, or victimizing behavior. Certainly mediation would not be appropriate as a supplemental or alternative process. Criminal action, of course, same thing. It's a red line that once crossed, you can't think of how mediation could help. But when you had formal disciplinary procedures, invoked and there's a warning or some sanction short of dismissal, you might think about mediation and whether it's needed or would be worthwhile to restore relations between team members or between manager and line employee, to help them get over that damage, if you like, from the formalities of the process. But the red lines are pretty much those that we can easily understand: gross misconduct, discriminatory claims, statutory torts or breaches otherwise, and criminal action. They're the four categories where really I would say mediation can't do its best work, and you need to actually decide as a business how you want to manage this scenario.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what I'd like to ask you about in a second then is some success stories and kind of real examples really of where you've seen it been super effective. But before I do, I know that we've got a good mix of clients and some HR consultants on the live session today. If you've used mediation or if you're thinking of using mediation, please just put a comment in the chat at the bottom, because I'm just curious to know like how much lived experience there is amongst the attendees today. So if it's something that you've participated in or facilitated or been a part of as a business, or your clients have done that, then please just put a comment in the chat. If it's something that you're interested in exploring further, and you like the sound of this as a means of, yeah, maybe avoiding getting bogged down in some sticky grievances, then please just comment as well. It's like a feel for what people's experience is. So Michael, I mean, I know you're drawing on a lot of experience here in terms of mediation. So just talk to us a little bit about where you've seen it being super effective.
Certainly as an additional management tool, as a performance management tool, teaching the skills of mediation, communication skills, and empowering managers to feel confident enough to have difficult conversations. That's all wrapped up in part of the wider management training need, particularly for new managers. But if you teach them the skills of the communications that we tend to use in mediation, that can help informally create the appropriate environment for a mediatory discussion that is much more focused on a positive outcome rather than the adversarial nature of the formal tools we've got at present, grievance and performance management and disciplinary codes. In other cases, where the parties are willing, if there has been inappropriate conversations or behavior, and the parties are willing to come together with an independent, an impartial, someone like me, then that can really be a very powerful way for the victim to explain and vent exactly how the other party's behavior or conversations have made them feel and impacted them. And that can be very restorative, really. But that is dependent upon the parties feeling comfortable in coming together and facing each other, if you like, in the same room. But it can be very powerful at actually changing behavior by often managers who have no idea of how their behavior or words are impacting in a team or in a business environment. Other areas where it can work well, I've already mentioned this, but before you draw out the grievance policy, see if the parties want to talk about would they be interested in talking to someone independent of the organization for mediation. It brings you both together and it gives you the better chance of actually sorting out the issue. The grievance process will be very cumbersome, very lengthy. You don't get to meet the individual typically. The business investigates, finds its outcome, yes or no to the grievance, fully or partially upheld, and everyone goes forward. And I've never yet found any grievance process successful in actually addressing the nature of the grievance, particularly where it's behavior or relationship based.
Yeah, but I would say, I know in my relatively limited experience of 16, 17 years of employment work.
Hey, that's a good period.
It is quite rare to see grievances being upheld by employers. And I think that's mainly driven by fear of an acknowledgement of some form of wrongdoing. And then I think what will follow from that, really. Whereas it strikes me that the advantage of mediated process is that there's not necessarily that kind of overt admission of guilt, if I can put it that way. I hadn't realized the chat function wasn't open to everyone when I was encouraging you all to chat and post a message before. I have changed the settings just now, so you should be able to use that now. So yeah, let us know about your experience of mediation or if it's something that you're interested in pursuing. But Michael, yeah, sorry I interrupted you there, but it is rare, isn't it, for grievances to be upheld?
Yes, I think you mentioned the point already. I think businesses don't want or are wary of finding outcomes, making outcomes, reaching outcomes that could leave them open to liability. But if you go back to the ACAS code itself, it does talk about mediation, encouraging the parties to talk about their issues. And I remember having this conversation regularly with a former colleague of mine in a different business, where he's now gone on to be an employment judge. He and I used to have this to and fro, back and forth about mediation. I'm a firm believer, as an American accredited mediator too, that there is nothing wrong in saying to parties, it's time for you to mediate. Go and talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, his view was, you can't force people to mediate. I would say that's right, you can't. But sometimes they need to know what's best for them. And you can't force people to compromise and reach agreement.
Mm. Well,
what is wrong in saying to them, go and talk about this before the case goes any further?
Mm.
Really, that's only what I'm recommending in the internal circumstances, that HR, particularly as the stakeholder of the rule book, if you like, are actually encouraging different ways before it gets too formal and the battle lines get entrenched and drawn.
Suppose if you think about how things escalate, if it turns into a claim, you've got, for pretty much all claims, mandatory ACAS conciliation, which I know is slightly different, and our experiences of that vary massively, I think, in terms of how useful it is. So there is like a funnel to it externally. And then during the tribunal process, we've all seen the question on the case management agendas of, are the parties interested in judicial mediation? Judicial mediation, like you no doubt, Michael, I've got experience of doing several of them. And I tend to find them just to be horse trading, really. There's no real one.
Number carrying is often the...
Just number carrying. So I think what you're saying is, well, actually, there's value in kind of taking the lead and taking control of it internally to avoid the situation where somebody actually issues a claim and is talking to ACAS and the parties are then getting more entrenched in what their position is.
Yeah, I think it's exactly that. It's diffusing a situation before it runs away.
Mm.
That's not to say if there's formal stages reached, mediation can't do its best work. You just have to try harder as a mediator. It might need a couple more sessions to actually penetrate the engagement, if you like, levels of the parties previously to unpick what's gone before.
Yeah.
But it's a mindset. And it's really satisfying to actually see people who come to you in the initial stages, often fearful, often unwell through depression, helping them forward over 3 months or so to actually find a solution and remove all that fear and
just
normalize. Very powerful process. I've had several examples of mediating for law firms where there was one which had a property team that were just all out of shape with each other. Conveyancing team. And after 6 weeks of various meetings and discussions, the back to work meeting was so positive that that I found myself just slipping out halfway through it and leaving them to get on with it and come up with their list of demands that they were going to take to the managing partner to help their future sort of handling of the cases. In terms of success rates, thanks for the comment, Kate. I just spotted your question. Certainly 75%, as high as 90%, the quicker mediation is embraced. But it depends on how you value success. Success in mediation can be narrowing the issues, lowering the temperature, making the conflict more easily capable of more formal resolution. Workplace discussions can also lead to separation discussions, but rarely do I see that happening if there's an issue between parties. Between employer and employee, that's more akin to a legal mediation scenario, a judicial mediation, in which case the options are more limited, if you like. They are bound, they're talking about dropping legal claims, withdrawing them, settling proceedings in return for compensation typically, and maybe an apology. But it's quite a hard one to measure, because how can you measure what you've avoided through mediation? Now, in our next session on the 6th of July, we'll be looking at measuring the cost of conflict. And I've got a formula that I can help HR in particular, but also business and finance, understand typically what you might incur in terms of time, internal cost in trying to resolve legal actions or pre-legal action conflicts, compared to how mediation might cost you between £2,000 and £4,000 for two sessions. HR wouldn't need to investigate or get involved if the parties agree mediation straight out the box. And so the cost of time, investment in people, and the external costs are avoided. So the savings can be significant. And then you get the question, well, how much damage have we avoided? The toxicity in the team? Have we remotivated the team in ways we can't really measure? So it's those unquantifiable benefits that are often the reason to try and get mediation working in the first place. It's not just about the money, is it? It's about sorting out the problem and delivering what the business needs through teams.
I think, in the current times, I mean, we know from discussions we've had with legal teams and HR teams that there's definitely downward pressure to manage costs at the moment and to make budgets stretch a lot further. And, you know, if you've got a budget of 20, 30, 40,000 pounds, whatever it is, 5,000 pounds, that budget's probably going to go a lot further in terms of mediation as a means of conflict resolution than it is in terms of funding tribunal defence proceedings, for example.
Exactly. That's just drawing the battle lines and going through the motions of the legal actions.
Yeah.
And I always say, well, before you incur that, consider the alternatives. Why wouldn't you try mediation to try and lessen the conflict at the outset?
Because
it'll only cheapen the outlying costs if you have to go into legal action. And it's a very credible thing to be able to say in your defence, mediation was offered with an independent party. We did lessen the conflict, but unfortunately we couldn't resolve it, and here we are.
Sends
a real credible sort of signal about the employer looking for alternative ways of resolving issues before embarking on litigation.
So just in terms of the comments, thanks everybody. It just seems that those of you that have used mediation do speak positively about it, which is great. Francis, your comment was interesting, that you see the value in it, even though you have been involved in a mediation where you didn't feel it was run very well and there's no agreed outcomes provided, but you've used mediation with positive results in other situations. And that kind of ties in with a point that Victoria is making as well, which is it's good that you come up with a list of go-dos, even simple ones. So I think you were talking about, you know, two parties just agreeing to say hello to each other when they walk into the office in the morning. And that means that there are specific behaviours which then change as a result of that mediated process, which is, you know, obviously really valuable. Before we wrap up, I want to say a couple of things. First of all, this is our first session in our latest series. And if you've missed any of our other two series, we've got a whole host. I think we're up to 40 previous webinars now, where we're looking at all sorts of topics related to employing people in business immigration. So you can find those on our website. You can find them on our Vimeo channel. And if you are on Spotify, you can listen to the audio recordings of our podcasts on Spotify as well. So please just look for Employment Law 101 and they should pop up. Michael, I think my question to you is, in terms of follow-ups, if anybody's watching today and they're thinking that this is something that I'm really interested in, I want to get some more information, how do I find out and explore about the value of doing this further? What can our viewers do?
Please contact me. Happy to have a chat through to see if we can help in any way, or ideas for introducing mediation as a process within the organisation, as a supplemental matter. I'm always open to conversations and persuading how mediation can be let in, if you like. And as you can tell, I'm very passionate about it. I've been called evangelical in the past about it. I think it's very powerful, and it has to have a place in the modern workplace. Why on earth are we going through these dances with the formal processes we've come to know and hate over the years? As the only way of trying to resolve issues between human beings, ultimately. And it's very powerful if people really truly understand what it can do and what it can't do. But just asking your people to talk to each other about issues doesn't seem to be much of a risk to me.
Communication. Everybody that's joined these webinars will know it's a drum that I beat a lot. Just effective communication. Yeah. I would mention as well, if people want further updates on this, please, if you're not connected with us on LinkedIn already, feel free to pop an invite or a follow up to Michael and myself. We're both on LinkedIn, and we've got the at NPM Legal site on LinkedIn as well. So please do connect with us that way. We have got another session in about a month's time, haven't we? I think it's the 6th of July. That session, remind me, what are we talking about there? The cost of conflict?
Yeah, measure why you should measure the cost of conflict as best you can.
Yeah.
And, I've got some interesting ideas for allowing you to see the sort of time that you can save to spend in HR, your rare time on much more positive things. And when you look at the starkness of the figures, particularly the external legal costs that you can typically find yourself incurring, for me, if I were a finance director, it's a no-brainer. Why wouldn't you try this first?
Exactly. So it's going to help you make the business case. It's going to help you make that business case as to why you should be considering using these tools if you're not already, I think. Thank you to everybody that joined today, and thanks for your contributions as well. As always, there'll be a recording of this coming out very shortly. We'll put it onto our website. Please tell all your colleagues and friends who might be interested in joining next time about these sessions. If you've got any questions in the meantime, please do contact Michael or myself. Our contact details are on our website. I hope it's been a good first session for you, Michael, and you've enjoyed it, and you'll come back on the
session. Yeah, I hope everyone else has found it useful. It's a very sort of introductory level, but it's hopefully whetted the appetite.
Yeah, well, it's been educational for me as well, so I've enjoyed it. Goodbye from a very sunny Henley on Thames. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll see you all on our next session. Goodbye.
Thank you, and goodbye.